the last two chapters that Rabbi Willie gave, there was not a contradiction, but something of a discrepancy. This will be the Kosov HaShlishi V'Yachriya B'neihem. The last time we heard the name of the Divrei Yatziv, that the Ksuba is a dead letter, it doesn't make very much difference. I don't know the Gabi why he said it. I don't think it makes very much difference in Halacha, except in one strange case, where you're dealing with a Shaila of Yichud because the Ksuba became possible. Is that what he was talking about? I don't know what he was talking about. What's Chilik? But other than that, I don't really know of any Nafkamina. But in point of fact, it's seldom that a Ksuba comes in Din Gavayna. The time before, we were told of a young lady who insisted in what's coming to her, as long as she wasn't asking for more than the Ksuba, I hope. Ksuba is Magiyalo. Of course she's entitled to the Ksuba, if she hasn't gotten in other ways. I don't think that the Ksuba, in the real world that we inhabit, is probably a dead letter. But there can be cases where the Ksuba is far, far from a dead letter. Bididihav Uvde, I got a phone call from a gentleman who identifies himself as an attorney, and he wants to know whether you can collect the ksuba, he wants to know what a widow is entitled to in halacha, in a beis din, telling me that the couple was a second marriage, there was a prenuptial agreement in which you waived everything, and now the husband has died, and she wants to know what she is entitled to. So I proceeded to inform her that she is entitled to be maintained in the style which she was accustomed during the lifetime of the marriage until such time as they pay the ksuba. And whether they can force her to accept the lump sum payment of the ksuba and terminate support and maintenance, so I have to tell them she is Sephardi and Ashkenazi. Well, let the Besdin decide that issue if somebody wants to raise it. And I told him, in my humble opinion, that I didn't tell everything. The enforcement of the ksuba in American courts has a checkered history. There are a number of cases in which the courts refused to enforce the ksuba. There are a number of cases in which the courts enforced the ksuba, not only enforced the ksuba as a legal contract, but managed to find things in the ksuba that I can't find there. They know Aramaic better than I do. Eger versus Eger, it was an obligation of a divorced husband to support an adopted child on the basis of the ksuba. I don't know where it's in the ksuba. I can find other reasons, maybe, that's got nothing to do with the ksuba. But contract, it was a chesed, there was such a p'sak din v'bez din Eretz Yisrael, had nothing to do with the ksuba. But, and then there was another Stern versus Stern. They knew they know things not only that I don't know, but that Tosis doesn't know. Stern versus Stern, Judge Held maintained that the Ksuba obligates you to issue a get whenever there's a breakdown of the marriage, and certainly when there are accusations of adultery. Tosis and Zvachim, the very first Omer, says that even when she's Mizanet, Tachas Baila, he's not necessarily, either Peskim would disagree with Tosis, but he's not Mechuyev to Megarish her. He just can't be Mishamish, but he can keep her as a scullery maid, whatever he's doing there. But he found grounds in the ksuba to divorce. I don't know where he found it. But he said that it's clear to me that the ksuba says in the Eflach, he'll tell me it's only in the lifetime. No, on the bottom it says something about chai hubosachai. You want to tell me it doesn't refer to mizaynus? We'll argue about it in court. But I think that the ksuba is enforceable, and I'm prepared to, if you'll write the affidavit, I'll sign it, saying that she can collect on the basis of the ksuba, which came after the prenuptial agreement, obviously. You signed the prenuptial agreement at the lawyer's office sometime before the marriage. Now before the chuppah, there's a give-back. There's a ksuba. I told my interpreter the ksuba is a give-back. She may have waived dower and who knows what else before, but now she's entitled to get it all back. So he listens quietly and says, thank you very much. I'm representing the estate. And hangs up the phone. I presumed it would not have settled. Okay. Now, what I'm really concerned about is what is the ksuba? Is, oh, I'm sorry. No, sorry. I know what ksuba is.
Finalized the telephone conversation by saying,
"I'm on the other side."
He's representing the estate. They don't want to pay.
How did he open the conversation?
I questioned Jewish law. He's got a woman, a widow. What is she entitled to?
He's got a widow. He was not the widow's lawyer. He was the other side's lawyer.
On the basis of what, though? Because
once he asks you what the widow's rights are, usually you want to know what your rights are in order to be able to enforce them.
Right.
When you speak to someone, you ask them who they represent, you knock on, right?
I know that also. You would have gotten the same answer.
But you know, I wouldn't suffer any sharp dealing like that. That's sharp dealing.
Talmud Torah. He wants to know. No. That's
the lawyer was really cruising the line of ethics.
He may have been over the line of legal ethics. In halacha, he had every right to do it. He wants to do the halacha, that'll do afterwards. So, there was nothing wrong. So the what I want to know is an insurance policy. And it's to my surprise when I went looking, and you people have computers. Please, if I miss something, let me know. There are a couple of other things I'm going to want to know if you can find for me. I don't know, other than one tshuva that was published in the late 1930s, Yehuda Chaim HaKoyin Masalin. He was writing in Cairo. The tshuva is Zeisli Yehuda Evan Ezer Simen Ches. He has a strange case, and the case doesn't make very much difference for us. It's just a curious case. Someone has, Svarti, had written a ksuba for 500 guineas. Don't ask me why a ksuba is denominated in guineas. Doctor's fees are in guineas, or once upon a time when there were still guineas around. It's a pound plus a shilling. So you had 500 of these. And 21 shillings in the guinea instead of 20 as in the pound. So the insurance policy was for 500 guineas. And coincidentally, her ksuba, with the Tosis ksuba, Kmina Kasvardim, they negotiate, it was also 500 guineas. And she was the beneficiary on the insurance policy. And now the husband has died, and she wants to collect her ksuba from the estate. And the Yarshim are claiming that the insurance policy was in lieu of the ksuba. And if that's not enough, this is almost, to me, a little bit of a chutzpah, but okay, they're entitled to argue whatever they want. They also, what the minhag in this kehillah was, that the ktesis ksuba and the ksuba can't be more than one half of the estate. You have to leave over in the estate amount equal to the Proina Ksuba, otherwise you can collect only up to a half of the estate. So it's one half of the estate or the Ksuba, whichever is less. But the Ksuba, which is a Meguzam, is actionable only against the big estate. This estate had, besides the insurance policy, 250 guineas. So they wanted her to give back 125 guineas. The estate is 500 plus 250, 750 guineas, and her ksuba and toisis can't be more than 50%, and she's holding 500, they should give them back 125 guineas. And the Zeis Yehuda takes it seriously, back and forth. He's done Mikamet Stodim, and the rest you'll have to look there. I have no more achrayus what the Zeis Yehuda says, other than to say that my conclusions are entirely different. Let me start trying to analyze what the claims with regard to the ksuba could possibly have been. The Yorshim are claiming that he gave her the insurance policy lipiroin ksuba. That I don't think is tenable. I don't think it's tenable because shtorach v'yodi, my boy, he left her the ksuba. He still has the ksuba in hand. Why didn't he ask the ksuba back if he's giving her the Peroi Naksuba, granted that there would have been problems of also the Hashas Ishtay Balei Ksuba, but we have Kazayin Mabez and Bob Mitzia, as Ksuba is found, and we don't automatically assume that it comes from the wife, because it's still a happily married couple. We're afraid that, sorry, Atasa, he gave her a bundle of coins to hold, and he took back the Ksuba. So apparently it's Shayech that the husband should hold the Ksuba, as give her a mashkin, and that he should take back the Ksuba while she's holding the mashkin. Otherwise, he wouldn't have given her the tsori in the first place. It's also true, somebody spoke to me, the Ramo does say that if your matzis betatlin, it's only the shor. It can't be b'derech keva. Even though, while he's matzis betatlin, he still has jurisdiction and control. He can invest it, he's entitled to payrus, but that's apparently only temporarily, not for keva, because you are afraid that he'll divorce her, and there's nothing to stop him from divorcing her if she's already holding the metaltolin. But even if that's the case, and he is giving her this insurance policy, I think the insurance policy he could have given her and continued living with her with an effect without a ksuba, because if he divorces her, the insurance policy isn't going to help him terribly much. He's still alive. He'd have to give it to her immediately. The insurance policy is also the gevina only after he died. So the shemet hakdichak tavshiloi, and he'll divorce her precipitously. This is enough of a minea. But if he does give her the ksuba, it would seem to me that if he does give her the insurance policy, at the very minimum, he should have gotten a receipt of one kind or another. He doesn't want to take the ksuba back because he'll need something or other to be able to live with her. But al kolponim, a receipt for the ksuba indicating that she has tsrori leproin chayv, if you want to keep it on a longer period of time, lechura it should work. I don't know why not. But if he doesn't have any proof that the insurance policy was leproin ksuba, she's holding the she's holding the shtar, and the shtar of Yodi, my boy. So to claim that this was the insurance policy was designed leproin ksuba, I can't. It doesn't make sense to me. In halach, at least, you have to overcome the chazok shtar of Yodi, my boy. And just to tell me that's what people might want to do, it's not going to help. Of course, people might want to do it, and you should have gotten something in exchange, indicating that that's what the insurance policy was intended for. The second way to argue this case is to acknowledge that the ksuba, if it's not praying ksuba, then what is it? Then it's a gift that the husband is giving his wife. He wants to provide for her. He's a good husband. That's why he bought the insurance policy in the first place. And it had nothing to do with the ksuba. He owes her the ksuba. That she'll collect. And the ksuba is not enough. He wants to give her more than the ksuba. So he's given her an insurance policy. It's no worse than if he had written a halachic will and given her whatever he wants to give her, achar me'ev esrim. So the issue then becomes whether, as a matone, is this a valid matone? Because if the matone is defeated, if it's not valid, not chal, then it goes right back to the state. If she is not a legitimate beneficiary of the insurance, then it goes back to the estate, or she has to return it to the estate, and it goes to the yorshim. So the question is, and what rights does she have to the ksuba if indeed the husband intended it as a gift? If he intended it as a gift, it's a dovar shel bal olam. He's giving her something for when he's not here anymore. There's no insurance as long as he's alive. And how can he give her a matona lachar misa? So I think there's several little things that have to be analyzed. And it's actually minyona d'yema of both the week before, when we were supposed to have this chabura, and of this week. The mechira of the bechira. Rashi thinks that the mechira of the bechira was only the mechira of the aveda. He doesn't need the problems, of the Avodah. The Rashbam and just about all the other Mefarshei HaChumash think that it was really the Yerusha. Only he's selling him a Dovar Shaloi Bo'Lo'ilom. So they all have problems with a Dovar Shaloi Bo'Lo'ilom. How can you sell a Dovar Shaloi Bo'Lo'ilom? So Rachaim, if I'm not mistaken, says it was the Takon of Kedei Chayov, Mashialim Sudosi Hayoim, I can sell. For Esau, the whole Bechir was Mashialim Sudosi Hayoim, because the only way was to get Nezida Dashim. Without Nezida Dashim, we'll starve. So you're reading Takonas Chachomim into this transaction between Yaakov and Esau. The Rashbam has a different mahalach, and it's a pella. The Rashbam says that he says the kinyan was the kinyan kesef. Where was the kinyan kesef? Son of Chumash. That Yaakov paid him for it. Then what else was going on here? But achar kach, he says etin lochon lochon Michael leedus ulikiyum. Still don't know what leedus ulikiyum means. He's made a kinyan, and the Nezid Adashim isn't Pateris Kesef. There was other Kesef. The Nezid Adashim, that was Leidus Lekiyum, Shemotzinu, Vayechushom Al Hagal, in this week's Sedra, Lovon and Yaakov, that was Lekiyum. Vayechushom Al Hagal, that was Lekiyum. I understand the Rashbam is saying that this is a kinyan Situmta, that it was the Minhag HaSeichrim, and you find other sources. That the other sources I wouldn't be reading into the Rashbam. But you have, number one, a Radak and a Chizkuni who seem to understand that this was some such arrangement, L'kiyum HaDavar. There's also, they quote, a Maram Rottenberg. They even tell me, Simon Tov Shin Lamed. I looked in all of the published editions, and I can't find it in Simon Tov Shin Lamed. Maybe your computers can tell you where it is. That this was a kind of a Kenyan Situmte. The Rabbi Yisrael Bechor Shor quotes it in his Perush on Chumash and says, Bedusahi. He disagrees, but he quotes this explanation of what's going on here. Now, all of this is assuming that a Situmte helps for Dovor Shaloi Bo Loilam. That Gufa is a Machlekes in the Peskim. Basically, I have trouble understanding it. If Situmta is a machlekes peskim nachrenin, where Situmta is a kin drabonon or is a kin deraisa, with all kinds of nafkminis lahalocha. If you tell me that Situmta is a deraisa, I have the vaguest idea how it can help for Dover Shalei Bo Loilom. Dover Shalei Bo Loilom, kinyin can't be chal on the Dover Shalei Bo Loilom, it's not nitvas and kinyonim. Or, for other achrenim, you can't sell a Dover Shalei Bo Loilom because there's no smichus das. Those also goes back to Yaakov and Esau. The ones, the Rachaim says that the Shvua was to generate Miras Das. There's such a Chuvas HaRosh, the Chuvas HaRosh to the same effect. But a Shvua can generate Gemiras Das. But why should Situmta generate more Gemiras Das than the Kenyan Deraisa? And more than any other Kenyan? What's the difference? One Kenyan or another Kenyan? If a Kenyan is designed for Gemiras Das, then Situmta can't be designed for more. If you tell me that Situmta is a Rabbonon, then all bets are off. They want to be Masak and Situmta in order to grease the wheels of commerce. And in commerce, people want to sell Dover Shalei Bo Loilom. So they created this kinyan for working on Idraisa, don't help. So they created it for Dover Shalei Bo Loilom also. That I understand. But apparently, the Rashbam and the Maram Rottenberg, all of them maintained that a Situmta helps even for a Dover Shaloi Bo Loilom. And if that's so, then I can sign an insurance policy with a Situmta. And the whole insurance policy is Minhag HaSeichrim. Whatever you do to execute a valid insurance policy, the Chura to me seems to be no worse than Minhag HaSeichrim. If you think Situmta is not limited to this little rubber stamp, but it's every Minhag HaSeichrim, so an insurance policy is no different from the Minhag HaSeichrim. And if he was named his wife as the beneficiary, naming the wife as beneficiary was in effect Situmta, being makna her the proceeds for a Dover Shaloi Bo Loilom. Actually, again, if you can help me with the sources, I saw people was saying that people they drink some mashke after they had a good business deal, saying that the drinking of the mashke is a kinyan. That's a kinyan situmta. That's what sochrim do when they have a good deal, and they quote a kesef hakadoshim, which I can't find, and they quote the mishpat sholem, which I can't find either. If you can find it, I'd be very happy to see it. I'm happy to see it because, going back to earlier chaburis, I think that it's very significant. Unless I am misreading the hishtalshlus and the history of Minhoge Yisrael, I have the impression that in this country people don't write Noim anymore, even in families where it was de rigueur to write Noim in Europe, because they're afraid. Having the Sein HaRabim, the incidence of broken engagements is much higher than it was once upon a time. And their cheshish, if not for the Groh himself, for what the Groh was concerned about, aknas liftar acherim, v'acherim liftar aknas. There seems to be acherim from whom I don't know. All I know is the Chassam Sefer says it's acherim akadmonim. We don't know where it comes from. And he's medama the acherim which you find in every sefer that nobody can publish without the rishus of the mechaber to the acherim hakadmonim of the tanoim. This is acherim hakadmonim, and that's acherim hakadmonim. We don't know who the original machrimim were. The only problem is that before Herr Gutenberg, I don't understand what you needed the Scherim for. So was that 400 years before the Chassam Sofer? Mele, the Scherim HaTanoim, Rav Mangi, the Man Kodesh, B'loi Shiduchei, they must have had these things in the time of Rav. So it was plenty of time to forget who the Machrim was. But to forget who was the Machrim for publishing a Sefer without Rishus al-Machaber, it was only 400 years. Why'd they forget it? But anyway, that's not my point. My point is that there is a cherem, it's a cherem akadmonim, and the Groh held lahaloche that the cherem is not subject to mechila. He can't be meichel the cherem. He concedes that if it's one of the cases where it's kafin legarish, you don't have to get married. They weren't machrim on somebody who doesn't marry if it's kafin legarish. But otherwise, he thinks the only way to avoid the cheirim is to get married and to get divorced. So the mizbeach is married the mois, but it's not a cheirim. This way you're not over the cheirim, at least. There's an arichus in Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe thinks that the cheirim isn't told. I think that what we do, what happens now, is because people were trying to avoid the onus of the cheirim. Came along Rav Moshe, and he said he haven't accomplished very much, because he thinks that what the people call, that doesn't have to be written, whatever they called the kinyan or whatever it was for a while, I can remember, I haven't heard it in decades. People talked about, instead of knowing, they talked about a kinyan. They did it without writing it. Rav Moshe says, "Im garnish dufketon, the cheirim doesn't depend upon writing it. Wherever there's the kinyan, there's automatically the same cheirim." Why I would like to see the kesef kadoshim is that today it's been replaced with a lechayim. And even if they have a so-called vort afterwards, the family gets together and there's a lechayim. The lechayim is the gemar of the shirach. According to Rav Moshe, and maybe even without Rav Moshe, it should trigger the cheirim hakadmonim. Now, I know that nobody has ever said something of the sort, but if the lechayim constitutes a situmta, then it's, and the kinyan triggers the cheirim, then the lechayim of the shiduchim should also trigger the cheirim. What's it worse than situmta? It's a kinyan like any other kinyan. In any event, the Pesach Chayshin doesn't talk about a l'chaim or the equivalent, but he does quote Pesachim who think that if it's bedibur bi'alma, it can't be situmta. Situmta bedibur bi'alma, he thinks, isn't sufficient. I think that he wasn't so proficient in what was going on in 47th Street or in the Burza in Tel Aviv, because a lot of people talk about the mazel ubracha as being a situmta, but that's because it's accompanied by a handshake. At Kiyaskaf. At Kiyaskaf could be worse than the kinyan, it could be a shu'ud. But that certainly seems to me to be in the category of a situmta. The Pisrechation is mefakbik on the Sechri Yalemim, and where that constitutes a kinyan, doesn't constitute a kinyan, primarily because he does know whether b'dibur b'alma there can be a kinyan, even if it's minhag ha'seichrim b'dibur b'alma, but it could be requires a ma'isa. That's one of the elements of a kinyan. In any event, if we're talking about being makne the insurance policy, so it would seem to me that as a haknoa, if it works and doesn't go back to the estate, because the dover shloi boloilom, it would have to be on the basis of situmta, assuming that this is a valid situmta. Yes?
The type of insurance policies we have, so isn't the company paying out the Baal pays in order, I mean, the money at the end of the day is coming from the Baal's estate, is coming from the insurance company.
Yes, I'll talk about that later. I don't know what makes any difference.
Why would it be
Doshua? You can't collect it till I'm dead. They don't owe it until you're dead.
Yeah, but the Baal doesn't owe it at all. The company owes it.
The company doesn't owe it until the person dies. It's not me'akshu l'achamisa. There's no
hill. Well, aren't they taking his chayvus? The company's taking his
chayvus. I'll talk about it, but there is his chayvus a little bit later. If you treat it as something which is worth money, and to a certain extent it is worth money, people go around buying it. Now, the question is, what are they buying? But insurance policy has a face value, and you can even assign it to somebody else. So if whatever you're assigning is the right to collect, only achar me'ah ve'esrim. So you're assigning a chayv which isn't ba'ilam even. They don't owe anything until achar me'ah ve'esrim. So we'll talk about that a little bit later.
So I've never seen term and collect.
Yes, term is just plain a simple gamble. if I survive.
Whole life, you have something.
Well, we're talking about life. Actually, in that case, it was a little. It was even more complicated. They don't write policies like that today. They used to write, even in this country, but in Europe it was pretty common. They wrote policies that were payable upon marriage or upon death, whichever came first. And then they began writing policies, even in this country, that were payable at a certain age or death, whichever became first, that were used in this country primarily for educational expenses, college tuition. In Europe, they were doing it so that the kallah would have a dowry. Goyim were doing it. That was the purpose. I've never heard of that in this country. This was one of those policies. It was 20 years. It was to be paid in 20 years or death, whichever came first, as distinct from what you do have in this country, 20 payment life, which is I pay premiums for 20 years, but I can't collect the proceeds of the insurance as long as the insured is alive. So that, you know, we're dealing here, it's a life insurance. It's basically, I'm ignoring the fact that you could collect a little bit earlier because I don't think it's crucial. It'll make a difference in one of the other points I'm going to talk about, but I think that there are not other factors to make the same difference. I don't think it makes much difference as far as
we're concerned. In the particular policy you're talking about, in this Shiva, presumably, unless it's, again, unique circumstances, there's who knows what kind of contracts these are, the insured can change the beneficiary at will.
Yes, the insured can change beneficiary at will.
So,
and I think that's
whoever the beneficiary is of the way you're analyzing this has the kingdom. If it's the estate, if he changes it to the estate, it's the estate that's not in the policy, so to speak.
You can have a kinyan im lo yachzor.
What?
You can have a kinyan if I don't renege. That I'm conveying to you these so-called halachic wills. Often use that kind of an arrangement. I am being makna you shra'ach ha'somach l'misa if I don't change my mind before, because you want to be able to revoke the will.
Regardless of who the beneficiary is.
Regardless of who the beneficiary
is. Even if it's the estate.
Even if it's the estate, why can't I decide not to put in the estate? Then right. If I change my mind, I will name some other beneficiary other than the estate. The my concern here is that if you view, what do you view the insurance policy as being. If you view the insurance policy as a gift to the beneficiary, it could be a conditional gift to the beneficiary, but if it fails for lack of kinyan, then it goes right back to the estate, and you haven't accomplished very much as far as what we're talking about is concerned. The other possibility is that it might be a mitzave machmas misa. And if he's a mitzvah machmas misa, then the wife gets it as a kind of a matnas shchiv merah. Now, the only problem with that is that the mitzvah machmas misa, in the classic cases, the ones we have in the Gemara, is either shchiv merah yitzil horig, you're the ayam yitzil b'sheyora, where their lives are in danger. And Chazal were masakin this for people whose lives were in danger. Shleitishav daitam alayim, who says the person who's perfectly hale and hearty and is entering into a contract with his insurance broker is a mitzvah machmas misa. It happens to be the fact that will be payable achar misa, but the fact that it's payable achar misa doesn't make him a mitzvah machmas misa, and as a mitzvah machmas misa, it should fail. However, there is a Mordechai B'Shem Ram Rottenberg that any matona that's conditioned upon death, even the matnas bori, that you can't collect until the mitzvah has died, is called a mitzvah machmas misa. The only reason that I mention it is because other people have it. Rav Moshe is the only one I know who thinks that an ordinary will drafted by an attorney has any validity in halacha. And I'm not going to talk about it. I think he didn't understand what a will was, but maybe he did. It's not my problem. And he thinks it's a kind of kinyan situmta. Situmta, it may work for Dorshle Bolloilom. Situmta doesn't work achamisa. And a will is for achamisa. So calling it situmta doesn't help very much. I personally think that Rav Moshe couldn't believe that they thought that it goes achar misa. I thought he thought it was matana sum of misa. But I'm not interested. It's not what he says. And I can be totally misinterpreting him. But he's using the theory of situmta to make it valid. And I don't know of anybody else that who writes about these things who thinks that it's valid b'teira situmta for the reason I just gave you. A situmta may work for Dover Shleba Loilom, but doesn't work achar misa. You can't be to something after death. But if you start with the Maram of Rottenberg, and that any matone that is not effective while you're alive, it's another way of talking about a will. I have a Maram of Rottenberg who thinks that the lawyer's will has tekif in halacha. Certainly it's better than the other arguments I hear floating around, and particularly if the person has already gotten possession, you can say kimli kamarami Rottenberg. If nothing else, it's a limud zchus that the person who's collecting as the beneficiary of a will shouldn't be a gazlan. Happens maisim b'chol yom, and nobody other than Rav Moshe has a way of justifying it. If you're ready to say kimli kamaram, I think that you have a basis for all of this. Sorry? Of course a big Kiddush.
The Gemara doesn't say it.
Huh? Of course the Gemara doesn't say it. That's why everybody's scaling. That's why, yeah? Okay, fine. Now, in this case, it's not going to work. It's not going to work because he had the right to revoke it. And even Maram maintains that, or most basically maintain, if the Maram does not chaylik on them, that whatever you could revoke isn't a mitzvah machmas misa. If you could revoke it, then it's not a matan in the first place. So that won't help very much for our purposes either. Certainly, if he can get it himself by surviving for 20 years, which is why that little point became significant, or by changing the beneficiary, then it's not a machtona muchletes, and it's not called a mitzvah machmas misa. So that's not going to work. The only other theory that you can use is where there's a mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. Mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames is not a kinyan, but it can create whatever a mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames can create. But that isn't going to work either, because there are many poskim who maintain that it's only if it's biyad sholish. And since this is a dover sholei bo lo'ilom, he don't owe you any money at all, how could this be biyad sholish? It wasn't matvis it in the sholish to hold it, so that it doesn't sound to work as a mitzvah kayim divri hames either. So that leaves us with very little ways to be mekayim the mekach. In addition to everything else, remember that the insured can always change the beneficiary, or he can surrender it for cash value. If he assigns ownership to the beneficiary, then he can't change the beneficiary, but it doesn't change the nature of the insurance policy in terms of its intrinsic nature. I think that if you understand the nature of an insurance policy, you'll see how it works as a gift to the wife in this case, but it will lead us to another problem. The insurance policy seems to me to be, first of all, the insurance premiums themselves to me seem to be a halva. I'm lending the money to the insurance company. The insurance company does whatever it wants to, and the insurance company isn't just returning premiums in terms of how they do their actuarial charts. They would be obligating themselves to much more than they're getting in premiums. They're counting on investing the money. It's an iska, it's a real iska without a heter iska. They have agreed to pay a certain stipulated amount, whether there's a profit or there's no profit. It's a tzad echot beribis at least. So don't, you know, I don't know of a heter for a Jewish company to sell life insurance. That sounds to me as if you're dealing with at least ribis. But the insurance company is taking somebody's money, and they have obligated themselves to pay more than the premiums. Because when the premiums add up to the face value, you're 99, and then they give you the cash back. That's how it works. You don't have to, if you survive long enough, you'll get it back. Otherwise, you're getting back more than the premiums that you have paid in. They've been using it, making money all these years, and now they're giving it to you, but they're giving it to you b'teiros ribis. So this seems to me to be a halvoa, payable not to the insured, but to the beneficiary. And if you'll ask, how does this work? It seems to me that it works on the basis of Heilech Mona Leplaini Viskachi Leplaini. Heilech Mona Viskachi Leplaini. It's Midin Eviknaini. I am giving you the money, you meaning the insurance company, and you now are mishubid to my beneficiary. You pay the beneficiary instead of me. So we have not a haknoa, not a haknoa at all, but we have a shibud. It's a halvoa with a shibud to pay the named beneficiary. The wife is the named beneficiary. The insurance company is the loive, and the loive became insured not to the insured, but became insured to the beneficiary. And the Yorshim have no claim against her. There's nothing that the Yorshim have here. Now, it's true that the insured can change the beneficiary. And if I'm right, then we have something of a problem with regard to how the insured can change the beneficiary. Because after all, if I gave you a Heilech Mona, the Skachi Leplaini, Mekudeshes Leplaini, and I can't do anything to take back the Kiddushin. Here's the Mona, and you're Mekudesh Leplaini, you became an Eishes Ish. I can't nullify that. I gave you, the insurance company, the Mona,